Hello and welcome to today's episode of Turning Readers into Writers. Now today it's a little bit different because I am sharing with you a pre-recorded interview. It was an interview I hosted on my Facebook group, Turning Readers into Writers, with author and editor Stacey Juba. The interview formed part of a season of interviews I was conducting over the course of August called the Author Accelerator, whereby I invited a number of different authors and experts to come in and talk about either their genre of fiction or the field that they are an expert in. And Stacey is an expert editor, and so I asked her to come in and tell us about the editing process, and in particular about her online program, Book Editing Blueprint. This is a program for new writers who, before they invest in the expensive business of hiring a professional editor, can make those basic edits themselves, get their book into the best shape possible before making that final investment. So if you are nearing the end of your first draft and you're looking to start editing your book, move on to that second draft, this is a great interview for you. You will learn a lot and you may even be interested in purchasing the Book Editing Blueprint to take your book to that next level. So let's find out what Stacey has to say. Welcome to the Turning Readers into Writers podcast, where we teach beginner writers how to find the time and the confidence to write their first novel. I'm your host, Emma Desi, and I'm very excited that you're here. Thank you for joining me today, because if you've been longing to write your novel for forever, then this is the place to be. Think of this as your weekly dose of encouragement, of hand-holding, and general cheerleading as you figure out how you're going to write your first novel. Trust me, as a mum of three young kids, I know how tricky it can be to tuck some time aside for yourself on a regular basis. And even when you do find that spare 5 minutes, you can feel so overwhelmed that no writing gets done. Trust me, I have been there, but this podcast is going to help you in practical ways, because once a week I'll be delivering an episode that gives you steps to building a writing routine, encouragement to build your confidence, and cheerleading until you reach the end. Okay, let's start. Well, fantastic. Hello, everybody. We are live again this evening. I hope everyone's well, having a good day so far, wherever you are in the world. If you are here with us live, hello and welcome to you. So glad to have you here. If you're watching on the replay, hello and welcome to you. Now, as I always say, whether you're watching live or if you're on the replay, please do pop your questions in the comments box, because, you know, this is for you guys. This is really for the benefit of you. And with each of these sessions, I want you to treat them as if they're sort of one-on-one coaching session with whichever expert we have on that day. So today we are going to be talking about editing. This is a very hot topic for everybody, because everybody has to edit at some stage. So if you've got any specific questions about your work in progress, whether it be a big structural edit or you're looking at more kind of the small details at the moment, whatever it might be, bring your questions forward and Stacey will be able to answer those for you. But let me tell you a little bit more about Stacey. So Stacey Juba has written sweet and sassy chick lit novels, mysteries about determined women sleuths, and entertaining books for young children and for young adults and for children. She has had novels ranked as number 5 and number 11 in the Nook Store and number 30 on the Amazon Kindle paid list. Her books include the Storybook Valley Chicklet series and the Hockey Rivals young adult sports novels. Stacey is also a freelance developmental editor, online writing instructor, and an award-winning journalist. She is the founder of Shortcuts for Writers, her signature course, Book Editing Blueprint, a step-by-step plan to making your novels publishable, which empowers fiction writers to think like an editor so they can save time and money. And she also runs the Shortcut for Writers Editing Made Simple group on Facebook, of which I am a member. So welcome, Stacey. Great to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Well, I wonder if you could start off by telling us kind of how you got into this crazy world of writing.
Yeah, I've been writing my whole life, really. I mean, I wrote my first story in third grade. By fifth grade, I was writing a mystery series about an amateur sleuth. And I wrote my first novel in high school. It was an ice hockey novel called Face Off for Teenagers. I wrote it to entertain myself because I loved ice hockey at that time and I couldn't find any young adult books about hockey. So since I loved to read, you know, and I loved to write, I said I should write my own. And I entered it in a competition for teenage writers that was sponsored by Avon Books. It was for ages 13 through 18, I think. And the winner got a publishing contract. In my freshman year in college, I found out that I won the contest. And this was back in like 1992. So I got the book published and I got a lot of fan mail from kids and it made some reading lists. So it did really well. Unfortunately, there were some years of rejection after that. I had a lucky break and then I had to pay my dues. And around 2010, I got my second book published, a mystery novel called 25 Years Ago Today. In between there, I was a newspaper reporter, did some like publicity for different organizations, like writing press releases. So I still did writing in my day job. Mm-hmm. But when I, in 2010, when I got my book 25 Years Ago Today published, that's like when I launched my website, my StacyJuba.com website. And I got a second mystery novel published with the same publisher. It was a small mystery press. And then around this time is like when Kindle and eBooks was taking off. I brought my book Face Off that was out of print. I brought it back in paperback as print on demand, and I brought it back as an eBook, and then eventually as an Audible audiobook. I published a sequel to it. Totally rewrote a sequel that had been in my drawer for years. So that was exciting. And then I got into freelance editing and online teaching. So it's been quite a journey.
Yeah, it has. So you've kind of done everything from like the front of house, if you like, doing the actual writing and being the author, and then kind of all the way through to backstage as well, kind of doing the editing. So it's interesting there that it's quite good to note that you wanted to read something that wasn't there, about reading kind of young adult ice hockey. And I love that idea of if you don't see what you want to read, then write it. I think it was Toni Morrison that said that originally, or is quoted as kind of having said that, but it's a really great thing. Yeah. If you're able to do that, if you're not able to find what you want, then write it yourself. Yes. I love that. Yeah, I didn't know that.
I think it's definitely, I mean, writing, it's a lot of discipline and hard work by yourself and a computer. So if you can write about something that you're excited about, that, you know, it's fun for you to write, I think that'll help keep you going. I still write about things I'm interested in, like with my Storybook Valley Chicklet series. I just love Disney. I love theme parks. They make me happy. So when I sit down to write, you know, it puts me in a good mood. So,
and so you've mentioned there that you write different genres of book. So how do you find that kind of changing genre? Are they all for kind of young adults? I can't remember if your sleuth novels are sort of young adult as well. How do you find making that transition from one genre to the other?
Yeah, I have three young adult books, which is Face Off and Offsides, my two hockey novels book. And then I have a young adult paranormal thriller, Dark Before Dawn. My mysteries, 25 Years Ago Today and Sink or Swim, are for adults. Right. And then my chick lit Storybook Valley, they're kind of humorous, sweet romantic comedy books. Those are for adults also. And then I also have a couple of children's picture books, The Flag Keeper, which is about the U.S. flag code and flag etiquette, and the Teddy Bear Town Children's Bundle. So yeah, I've been all over the place, and it wasn't really something I intended to do. It was just like kind of, you know, my first book was Face Off, like the hockey book. And then I was young when I was still pretty young when I wrote my book Dark Before Dawn. It was a book that went in a drawer for several years because I had a lot of near misses of publishers. You know, it came close, but it didn't get published ultimately. I ultimately wound up self-publishing it after a total rewrite. But at the time when I initially had that idea, I was still like 20, you know, young. So I was still kind of in touch with that young adult world. My book Off Sides, my sequel to Face Off. It was very interesting experience because I created those characters when I was 16 years old. So it was a very interesting experience revisiting them again, like in my 40s as a parent, you know. I had a totally different perspective. So it was kind of like a collaboration with my teenage self. You know, that was a really fun book because I found it very easy to get back into those teenage boys' minds, but I also had like this mom's perspective. So I developed the parents a lot more than I did in the first book. And, you know, I think I just kind of made the adults more three-dimensional than I did in the first book because I just had a broadened perspective. Mm-hmm. So that was fun to do. And then mysteries was sort of like my first love growing up. I loved reading Nancy Drew books and Hardy Boys, Trixie Belden. So, you know, even when I was a kid in fifth, sixth grade, I was writing mysteries. So that hockey book was kind of a detour for me just because I had gotten into hockey. And but most of what I wrote back then was mysteries. So I decided to, in my 20s, you know, when I was wanting to write my first adult novel, I was like, well, what should I write? What should I? And I decided to go with mystery just because, again, that's what I had always loved to read. Mm-hmm. And I found that writing for adults, I think, does come more naturally to me now than writing for teenagers. I just find that those, my adult books just come more easily to me. Whereas like with the young adult books, I kind of have to, you know, run things by my kids, or my husband's a high school teacher, or run things by him, you know, because I'm not quite as in touch with that as I was when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And then I think my storybook valley books, I never would have expected that I'd switch like to a chick lit funny genre, you know, because I think people would describe me as like serious and introverted, you know, but as an adult, I discovered chick lit, like The Devil Wears Prada, Sophie Kinsella books, The Confessions of a Shopaholic, and I really loved the books. They made me laugh out loud, and then when I just got an idea for one, and I started to write it, and I found that it just came very naturally, and I liked kind of having that kind of lighter, humorous side of myself come out. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest challenge for me with all of the books I've written was actually writing children's picture books. Because that is, even though they're short, it's you know, it's really an art, you know, it's something that it's not, they're not easy to write. It might look deceptively easy, but it really isn't. So I had a lot of critique partners that I work with at that time who are children's writers, and they helped me a lot. And children's picture books isn't like a genre that I'm comfortable editing. You know, I don't take those on. Because I don't feel it's my strength, but you know, I think I did do a good job with the ones that I have felt motivated to write. The time, like in my when my youngest daughter was a baby, I had undiagnosed like Hashimoto's, like hypothyroidism, and finding that I just didn't have the concentration to work on a novel. And I was reading a lot of picture books to my daughter at that time, so I mean, I was reading a lot in that genre, and then I just got an idea. Because my husband liked to bring our U.S. flag in and out every night and, you know, every morning. And he taught me a lot about the U.S. flag code. Because I was like, why don't you just leave it out on the flagpole all the time? Why are you bringing it in and out? And he was talking about, you know, how we treat the flag with respect. And so that just gave me this idea for a children's picture book. And I just kind of went with it and, you know, wound up publishing it. And I sent copies of it to directors at the National VFW and the National American Legion Post, and they gave me testimonials because it just kind of filled this kind of gap in knowledge, I think, for kids in the U.S. because a lot of them know about the origins of the flag, but they don't know how to treat it with respect. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad I wrote that book, and I, you know, I did a couple other books during that time also, picture books, because I, again, I didn't have that concentration to focus on a novel until I got that, you know, my thyroid under control, and luckily I had some great critique partners and an agent at the time, so, you know, I got a lot of feedback, but I don't think that's a genre I would go back to just because it was harder for me than the others, than the mysteries and the chick lit. Mm-hmm. I think some genres do just come more naturally to you, and you know, you just got to try different genres and see where you're comfortable. Yeah.
See what fits. So do you find that now you d- do you just kind of write one genre at a time, or do you find that you can kind of swap between them? As because I love the fact that you've said it a few times now, I just had this idea and I thought I'm just going to go with it. So do you still write in that way, or are you a bit more targeted now and you think, okay, I've not written a sleuth one for a while, I better do that, or I've not written a chick lit for a while, I should give my readers another one of those? Are you a bit more kind of strategic about it now?
Yeah, I think I'm more strategic about it, just because in terms of, I've seen, you know, more the business side of writing, and in terms of sales, like, it's, I think readers, especially like in the mystery genre or the romance genre, they, a lot of them gravitate towards series. I like series. So that's why I made my Storybook Valley novel a series, because I, so that it could kind of grow as I wrote more books. You know, I've even heard that like around book four is when you really start putting a lot of money into advertising, because then you'll, you know, because then if you get readers hooked on the first book, they'll want to read the other. So that's kind of my strategy. And again, it's a series I love writing. So I think it's sort of like a combination of like the creative side, something I really want to write that I'm passionate about, but it's like a strategic business decision to make it a series, you know, rather than to keep doing the standalone mysteries as I was doing. Mm-hmm. So I see myself kind of focusing more on that series. Although my hockey series, my first two books on the Hockey Rivals series, those sell really well. Like, those sell copies every day. And I think it's because a lot of parents are looking for books for their teens. You know, there's not a lot of sports books or ice hockey books out there. And, you know, this is technology. There's so many different distractions. And it just seems like, you know, parents are finding those books and buying them for the kids because mm-hmm. they think it's something that might, you know, grab their attention. And again, I like writing about those characters also. So I, you know, I'm not opposed to writing like a third book in that. I've really been toying with an idea, but I think those for the foreseeable future, those two series are where I see myself writing.
I see. Cool. Oh, that's great. No, it's, I love it. I love it. Love that you're cross-genre there, keeping your options open. So I'm going to kind of, because we're here to talk about editing, so I kind of want to lead us on to that. Now, you are, you do quite a bit of editing, don't you? You're a developmental editor. Do you also do sort of line editing and copy editing as well?
I do sort of a mix of developmental and line editing. Copy editing, I'll do like light copy editing for sort of my clients that have more polished and stronger drafts, like structurally. Mm-hmm. But if it's a client that has a lot of problems with grammar and punctuation, and a lot of people do, a lot of writers, you know, the creative side comes more naturally to them, but the, you know, the nitty-gritty of the, yeah, the commas and the semicolons and the, you know, dialogue punctuation is harder for them. So in those cases, I'd say, you know, you should really hire you know, a copy editor and, you know, maybe even a proofreader. Mm-hmm. Because it's hard for, I think it's hard for a developmental editor to do everything, because, you know, when they submit a book to me, I'm really looking, I'm giving like an overall picture. Like, I'm looking at the big things, like the characters and the structure, the plot, like for plot flaws, like their technique, like whether they, you know, tell rather than show, or, you know, if their style is passive or active, you know, what kind of line editing do they need, like what kind of overused words are they using? So I'm kind of looking at everything, the big things and the small things, and I'll evaluate, like, yes, this is an author who's probably going to need to hire a copy editor, you know, or proofreader, because, you know, and I'll tell them that. I'll point out some of the issues that I'm seeing, but I'm not necessarily going to pick, you know, to fix each issue, because they'll become obsolete if if they need to go back to rewrites. And most of them will need to do some rewrites. So I'm kind of more focused on, you know, the bigger picture and getting that draft as strong as possible structurally, and giving them some tips on how to improve their writing. And then, then they can focus on the copy editing later.
Later. Because I remember when we've talked before about your shortcuts for writers, one of the reasons you said that you developed this program was because when you were doing these developmental edits for beginner writers, people new to writing, you found a lot of people were struggling with the same things, and you thought, oh, okay, there's clearly a need here for people to be able to do those basic edits before hiring someone like yourself, a professional editor. So I kind of want to delve into that a little bit more, and I'd love to know your thoughts. If someone is new to, they've written their first draft and they're really excited, and now they've got to start that editing process. And the best place to start, I think, is that overall kind of bird's eye structural edit, isn't it? What are your recommendations for somebody who's wanting to do that for the first time? How would you recommend they start that process of doing the big picture edit?
So I created my class sort of as a stepping stone, my book editing blueprint class as a stepping stone to hiring an editor, because what I was finding was that so many writers were hiring me too early, and I would hear the same thing from other editors. And I think what you have to learn how to do is teach yourself how to take the manuscript as far as you can on your own before you hire the editor, because editors are so expensive. I would say, like, to get your, if you have like a 300 page manuscript, you're probably not going to find a developmental editor for like under $700. And that's low. That's actually low. The average developmental editing costs are like $50 to $55 an hour. And that could just be like for a handful of pages per hour. So a lot of authors don't realize that going in, how expensive it is. And then the second thing is that they think that, okay, I'll hire an editor and then they'll send it back to me and I'll rewrite it. And then it's ready. Then it's ready to publish, or it's ready to send to an agent. And it's a process where it's usually with beginner writers, it's going back and forth multiple times. And of course you have to pay for the editor's time for each round. So again, it could be like another $700 and then another $700. And I've had some clients who, that are such beginners that they've never written anything before, and that might have some trouble with also like with grammar and punctuation. So they're trying to learn everything from the nuts and the bolts. And I've had some that ideally would have needed like 6, 7, 8 rounds of developmental editing, and that's before hiring a copy editor and proofreader. And of course, like, nobody can afford that. So, so my advice is to learn as much as you can on your own, so that you're not sending like a first draft to an editor. You want to, and hiring an editor is definitely essential. There's even like authors who have contracts at mainstream traditional publishers who will hire a freelance editor first, before they send a manuscript to the editor at their publishing house, because they want it to be as polished and strong as possible, because publishing, it's very competitive, and they want to send a manuscript, that's well-developed and that they've taken as far as they can on their own, because that'll make them look good and make them, somebody attractive to work with. So if experienced authors are hiring freelance editors, and it's definitely, you can see how like new authors, intermediate authors really need to hire one also, because it's so competitive. And even if you just want to indie publish, Amazon reviewers and customers, they won't be shy about leaving a 1-star review if your book has a lot of flaws in it. So, you really want to make sure that, number one, that you do hire an editor at some point, but before that, you want to learn how you can take the manuscript as far as you can on your own. So you want to look at things like, say, your characters and your plot. I have like a whole checklist of things to look at, both the big structural things and then the smaller kind of scene by scene things. And then like, once you have like a draft that's pretty well developed, it's structurally sound, then you want to go through and do the line editing and the tightening and see if you can fix some of those copy editing issues. As you were saying, I've noticed that a lot of authors were making the same mistakes. So I think one of my tips would be like, if you feel overwhelmed by the editing process and like, oh, there's something wrong with me, and I'm making so many mistakes. Everybody does, I did, everybody does. And it's the same. That's why I created the course, because I was seeing those exact same mistakes from so many different writers. so you just need to familiarize yourself with what these issues are and learn how you can take your manuscript as far as you can. And then it's time to invest in an editor.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if someone is kind of just starting out, because I'm actually, for those people watching, I'm actually going through the program myself. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm going through it. So I found it really, really helpful. And if you were to kind of just to sort of give viewers a kind of flavor of how you teach, if we were to look at kind of doing a structural edit, the overall edit, is there any kind of guidance that you might give or a top tip that you might give for doing that element of the editing? And then I would also ask, you know, because you cover, as you say, like character setting, timelines and many things. Do you recommend doing them all at the same time, or do you recommend choosing, say, setting and then going through the manuscript and looking at setting and then going back and doing character and then going, you know, giving each element of the edit a separate pass, or doing it all at once while you go through it? So first of all, about the kind of the big picture edit, would there be a kind of top tip for that that you might have for people?
Yeah, I recommend, and this is I do this myself, like for my book Offsides that I took out of my drawer, the one I wrote when I was like 18, 19, I always say that I was like my own worst client, because every single word had to be rewritten. So I followed this kind of system for that book also, because it was basically, I took this idea, I made a few things here and there, but I totally revamped it. And it would have been overwhelming to just kind of focus on everything at once, because there was just so much to fix. So I recommend you kind of start with the bigger things first. Like one big problem that a lot of manuscripts have from newer writers is that they don't have enough plot points. And so I recommend that you follow like a three-act structure, you know, where we have your beginning, where you're setting up the premise and you're giving your character like a clear goal and hitting at some conflict. And then the middle tends to fall short for a lot of newer writers, where they just don't have enough conflict, or they make things too easy, or they wrap up everything just way too easily. And then there should be a point in the manuscript, like, you know, like if it's like a 300 page book, maybe the last 75 pages or so, it should really be building and building and building toward this climax. And a lot of manuscripts will just kind of fizzle out. And then the last 75 pages will just be kind of episodic or more like a prolonged epilogue, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of times you can see this in the blurbs that they write, because I always ask them to submit a blurb with their manuscript, just so like when I'm editing the book, just so I can kind of see what their vision of was. In a lot of times, the blurb doesn't have enough in it either. You know, it's just not as meaty as it should be. It doesn't have enough twists and turns. So that's one thing you just want to really focus on first, because, you know, it doesn't matter how well like your page was line edited, if your whole middle like doesn't have enough conflict and plot twists. So you want to just focus on that and look at the three-act structure and how is your character changing from beginning to end, and, you know, make sure you know your character well. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first focus. And then
pick up on that there. That's interesting that you ask for the blurb as well at the same time from your client. So for you, what do you want to see in, because I think that's probably a really good idea. I've heard that before from other editors, saying that if your blurb is strong, then it shows you've got a strong idea for your story, and you can keep coming back to that, and that can, as you're writing, that can give you your North Star, keep you focused. What in an ideal world, what do you like to see as the kind of perfect blurb from your clients? Is it because is that the same as having a short synopsis, or is it something quite different?
I'd say it's different. Like a synopsis is more like a 1-3 page document that you would send like to an agent, you know, kind of giving them an overview of what's in each chapter, and except writing it more of like an enticing kind of way. So it's not just like a book report. So it's synopsis are kind of challenged, where you're trying to make it sound interesting and, you know, flow well, but you basically want to show that you know you know, exactly what's happening in each chapter and how it's all going to tie together, you know, because that'll show that your book is kind of has a solid structure and it's well thought out. And the blurb is more like what you'd see like on the back cover or what you'd see on, you know, a retail site like Amazon. I have a Facebook group called Shortcuts for Writers, Editing Made Simple, and I have a free book blurb toolkit in the unit section in unit one. So, and I go through it that I wrote up something, which is kind of giving my advice of what should be in a blurb. And it kind of varies depending on your genre. So one of the things I recommend is like come going on a little scavenger hunt, like on Amazon, like take your genre, like if you write like paranormal fantasy, or if you write sweet romance or steamy romance or whatever you write, young adult, go find some of the successful books in your genre and look at like at least like 20 blurbs and kind of see if you notice any patterns. There might be certain words that jump out at you, like, you know, in like an action book or suspense book, they're going to use kind of more gripping, intriguing, you know, kinds of words than like a quieter, you know, women's fiction novel. So you want to kind of get a feel for those successful blurbs, because those are the ones, if the book's doing well and successful, then it's attracting readers. So you want to kind of get a feel for that. And I think you want to kind of focus just on maybe like one or two of your main characters. For example, like a romance novel, you usually would focus on two of them in the blurb, like with naming them. You don't want to name a lot of characters in your blurb because that's going to get off focus. You just want to kind of boil it down to the, you know, really the most important, like, the most important characters, like the protagonist or the antagonist or love interest, or and then try to hit on the different plot points, you know, the biggest, you know, some of your, you don't have to give everything away. You don't want to give everything away, but just kind of hint that, you know, what the danger is, you know, like, for example, like I recently edited a manuscript where it was one of those books where they, and it, there wasn't enough in the middle, and it just kind of went on. It was almost like a very long epilogue. And the blurb just kind of hinted like, oh, you know, they faced troubles or something, you know, like that. But it didn't kind of give, it didn't delve into what those troubles were. And then neither did the book. It was just kind of all wrapped it up. So basically you want to make sure that you're hitting on these different plot points. You want to have plot points at different points in your book. And you want to kind of hint at that in your blurb.
Because
if you don't have enough to write about in your blurb, then you probably don't have enough to carry a book, you know.
That's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to quickly go to the comments. And we've got someone here who says, wow, it seems easy you had embarked upon the journey of exploration. So I think I must be referring to your cross-genre that you're trying lots of. And then we must say hi to Janice. Hi, Janice. Good to see you. Now, so with that, so that's the kind of the big picture, the developmental, and then as I said, your course goes through all the different elements of, you know, I gave the examples of setting, character, timeline. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, but as so now, do you recommend trying to tackle them all in one pass, in one read of the manuscript, or do you recommend going back and doing them all individually, especially, you know, if you're a beginner and this is all still quite new?
The way I do it, the way I recommend doing it, is doing it individually. So once you've got, you know, your basic, your plot and your character arc, and you feel like you've got, you know, your basic storyline is there, then you kind of you want to kind of fill it in, so you can go back and I would like look at all the like if there's I can often like I'll start with my characters, like okay, let's say there's something they have like a journey, like what's their journey from beginning to end, and make sure that you have some scenes that show that. So that would be sort of like the first thing, making sure that you kind of glance through your book and see, is it clear? Like, is your character's journey clear? Do you have enough? That's kind of, you don't want to like beat the reader over the head with it. Like, okay, this is what you have to learn from this character. But, for example, like in my Cinderella book, you know, it sort of follows the Cinderella theme where she kind of puts, she does things for everybody else and she doesn't put herself first, and she needs to kind of nurture herself more, and you know, not just always say yes to things. So I had to make sure I'd go through and make sure I have some scenes that illustrate that, that kind of thing. And then again, look at your supporting characters. Do they all have a purpose? And does any of, you know, if a character has a purpose, like this ought to be a source of conflict or to be a confidant, are you using that character enough? Can you go through and look at those scenes? You know, are your, did you describe all your minor characters? And, you know, do you need them all? Are there any that just don't really seem to add anything, like you could combine? Because sometimes I've seen like new writers have like too many characters and it's hard to tell them apart. It, you know, so sometimes you can kind of just get rid of a couple. It's painful, but you know, you really miss them when they're gone, you know? And then I like to look at like all my description, like I'll go through and look at, you can even use a highlighter, you know, different colors, highlighters. Like I like to print out hard copies, and usually I'll be printing out multiple hard copies. Like I'll print out a hard copy, then I'll go through it, looking at my characters and, you know, my description, you know, I'll highlight all my description and then go through it and just make sure I've just described everything to the way that I want it. Sometimes like then I might need to do research to make a description come alive better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I might like put a note in the margin, like, okay, do some research, come back to this. And so I just want to really focus on all my descriptions and my settings, make sure every scene has a setting, you know, look at the beginning of every scene, because sometimes new authors have a tendency to just kind of start with like with dialogue and you don't really know where they are, kind of like talking heads, you know, or they, or they maybe it continued from the last chapter and it's like, okay, this is continuing, but you know, people might have put the book down and they're not necessarily remember where they are, you know, or make sure that every scene is like maintaining that setting, because a lot of writers, beginner writers, will just kind of, okay, maybe at the beginning of the scene they'll say where they are and then the scene just goes on for like five pages and they're just talking and the author forgot to weave in the setting details, you know, so you want to make sure that you're looking at every scene and can you visualize the setting? Are you maintaining the setting? Is there any more props you can use, you know? So that kind of thing. So
yeah. I certainly found that today. I was doing some editing and I was thinking about your program and I was like, yep, I've just found some talking heads. So then I had to kind of reframe that and give them some context as to where they were. Yeah. One of the other things that your course is really, I find really, really useful is helping us to, with the words that we use. So you encourage us to move from passive to active words. And I think that's right, from passive to active, so that the character is taking action rather than action happening to them. So I found that really useful. I wonder if you talk a little bit about that. And then maybe we could also talk about how each of us have words that we return to again and again, and we use them repetitively without realizing it, and how we might be able to pick that up and stop doing that.
Yeah, so one thing that a lot of authors do is like using a lot of like was and were. And you know, I always say that you're never going to have a book without was or were. It's impossible. So it is, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with the was or were, but you want to make sure that you're not seeing it multiple times, like in a paragraph or on the page. So, you know, if you can go through, if you highlight all the was and were, if you're seeing it a lot of times on the page, and then you're probably writing too passively. And this is probably an issue that's going to kind of, you know, go through the whole book. You know, if you see it, pages, it's probably going to be through your whole book. And that's like an editing pass that you want to do. I mean, hopefully like it's sort of as you go, once you realize this, as you go back and you're doing those other editing passes, it's like focusing on your, you know, your characters and your setting and your plot and everything that should be in your mind. So hopefully you'll start writing those new scenes or doing these rewrites more actively, but you'll definitely want to do a pass, just kind of going through the manuscript and making sure that every scene is as active as it can be, that you're not seeing a lot of was and were. If you are, like if you're seeing a lot of sentences like he was, she was, they were, you know, is, are, you know, be, then you want to try to see if you can turn some of those around and make them more active. You know, a lot of times you can just easily do that. You know, like I'm trying to think of an example, like, you know, if she, some authors will kind of tell rather than show, well, like she was happy or she was mad. So you want to find a way to show that rather than just telling us. So that kind of thing. So you just want to look for things like that. or like the, there were books on the bookcase, you know, you could say something like books line the bookcase, you know, just to give you like the examples of the kind of things to look for. Yeah. And then as far as like overused words, there's like a whole like list of words that I see used over and over again, like different by different writers. Look is like probably the number one word. I mean, I've seen that used, you know, like 300, 400 times, like in some books.
Okay.
Even like by some published authors, bestselling authors, I was reading a book recently and you know, there was like look used a few times on the same like paragraph. And I was like, oh my gosh, I would just, it's so good. But I would, you know, they think it could be made even better by just changing one. We didn't need to have all those looks in that paragraph. So I'm telling you, everybody does it, but just a different extent.
And just to kind of just to say as well, in Stacey's program, you very helpfully do give us a list of those very common words that we can look for in our own manuscripts, and I've certainly found that really useful. So I just wanted to
Yeah, so it's the words like look, took, turn, walk, and I recommend just kind of going through it, and you know, depending on with your preferences, if you have a hard copy, you could go through and just highlight looking for those words. I can't get around it. Again, you don't have to eliminate everyone from your character's vocabulary or from your vocabulary, but you want to make sure that you don't, you know, if you have like a 300 page manuscript, maybe you want to try to get down 30 or 40 looks. You don't want to have like 100, 200, 300 looks, because those are just, and then if you, usually when authors have like a lot of one words, that means they probably have a lot of walks, or they have a lot of, you know, tooks, and that's just going to add up. If you, it's like I have a cumulative effect where if you're using these words over and over again, it's just going to have this cumulative effect where your writing isn't going to be as vivid or as unique as it could be, because you're kind of relying on bland words. So you could either go through and highlight them and, you know, just kind of ferret them out and rework them, or you could put a, use a search bar and just put your most common words in it, you know, put look in, and then it'll take you through and you can kind of evaluate each one and, you know, just determine which ones you want to keep, which ones you want to rework, or which ones you can just kind of totally delete and nobody will ever notice. So,
but interesting, when we were talking earlier, you were telling me a funny story about how it's not just those kind of common words. It can be even, you know, more unusual words. And you gave me a lovely example earlier with your own work.
Yeah, sometimes, so there's a really common words that everyone overuses, and then some writers just for whatever rhyme or reason, they just have their own list of words that they use again and again, that just kind of stick in their mind. And one time I was like really surprised, because I hate snakes. I like absolutely hate them. Like my whole family laughs at me. Like if one comes on TV in a quick commercial, I'll like scream, you know. I have to look away if my husband and I are watching something and there is one, and he'll tell me when I can look again. So, I mean, it's like really bad. So a reader of my mystery novels like wrote to me, and she was telling me, oh, I really enjoyed your books and everything. But she's like, I was just really curious. Are you afraid of reptiles? Because I noticed you used the word reptilian a few, maybe three or four times over, you know, across a couple of your different books to describe like something scary, or, you know, describe somebody's face or features. And I was like, yes, I'm afraid of snakes. So now, like, I'm always, that's just always in my head. Like, if I'm writing something, oh, did I use reptilian?
I love it. Just going to go back to the comments. Hi, Sajid. That was Sajbin under Abdul. Sajid is asking, I want Stacey to explain to me whether she finds any conceptual or grammatical errors while she's editing.
Yeah, I do find a lot of grammar errors. When I have a manuscript that's like submitted to me, I have the free version of Grammarly, and I also have the paid version of ProWriting Aid. So I will run a scan through manuscripts like before I even sit down to read them, just to kind of clean them up, and just fix those things. But some authors, you know, and then I'll kind of, as I'm going through it, if it's an author and this is like a later draft, or maybe I've worked with them on some of their earlier drafts, or it's an experienced author who has several books published, then I'll do some light, you know, I'll do some copy editing, and that might be enough for them, you know, between the two of us, you know, where we're both good on grammar. They might not need to hire like a copy editor. I definitely always recommend them having somebody else proofread it, you know, whether it's paid or whether it's just, you know, people they know who are good at finding mistakes, you know, so you always want to have somebody else proofread it. But there are also some authors where once I've run those scans, those are helpful. You know, I recommend that people have those programs themselves because that can really help you, but they don't catch everything. It helps to clean it up, but it does not replace a copy editor. So see a lot of errors on like a certain area, like if they're having trouble like punctuating dialogue, like sometimes a common mistake is like punctuating dialogue, they'll have like the use like a period when they're supposed to be using a comma, like inside the quotes. I'll just give them an example in my editorial letter, like, okay, this is, I'm seeing you making a lot of this mistakes. This is how to do it correctly. You know, I'm not going to fix every one of them because I'm not a copy editor. And plus you have a lot of other rewrites to do. And, you know, that's something that comes later, but, you know, I will like draw their attention to it if I see those kind of mistakes. So, you know, it just kind of depends on the level.
Do you help them also at the developmental stage? Do you, Sajid used the word conceptual. So do you kind of help people develop the theme or the whole storyline, or do you, is it more about the placement of where plot points go, conceptual errors? So I'm wondering if Sajid, if that's to do with the whole kind of overall theme of the book, or is the plot line, I wonder?
It's both. Like for me, like I will, when they submit something to me, I will I'll give them my feedback on the whole like concept, and you know, are they, you know, did they develop it enough to its full potential? And if they don't have enough, you know, I'll do a lot of brainstorming. So, you know, my editorial letters tend to be like 8 pages, you know, and a lot of times I'll say, you know, this character, you know, maybe you could do more with this, and I'll give different ideas. Like, just, I think that's why I'm a better developmental editor than I would be like a, if I was just doing copy editing and proofreading, because my mind thinks more in the bigger, like in the concepts, whereas like the copy editing and proofreading is always like a little boring to me. You know? Like I would have trouble just reading a manuscript and just like changing all the commas and everything, because that's not my strength. And I kind of think more in terms of like the big concept and, you know, helping the author kind of make the whole overall story and characters reach the full potential. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the theme, what is the theme of the book, and is it, again, you don't want to, I think I say in the class, you don't want to hit the reader over the head with it, but there has to be like a theme, you know, what, I think in the course, I talk about Luke Skywalker as an example of the themes in like Star Wars, and, you know, how there's major themes and then there's like more minor themes. So that is something that definitely a developmental editor could look at to try to help bring out.
Mm-hmm. I think you may have answered Abzul's other question. Sajid's other question was, what do you think about vocabulary? Should it be high, kind of high or simple words? So I guess big words or small words, I guess, is the...
I think it depends on your audience. I mean, like, if you're writing like for like children, obviously you want to be using words that are appropriate for them. But I think, you know, you want to have some high, for writing for adults, you want to have some higher scale words in there. Because again, you don't want to just keep going back to the simple. Sometimes the simple words are the easy ones, like the ones that are the look and the walk and the nod, you know. You can have some of those in there, but you want to use a thesaurus. You know, I definitely recommend using a thesaurus or an online thesaurus site and just trying to find some more colorful, more vivid words also. So it's, I think it's about the balance. You don't, and one problem that nonfiction writers have, I see this kind of more with nonfiction writers, is using a lot of jargon, kind of longer words. They're almost going the opposite problem where they're using these just, you know, like using a word like facilitate or utilize, and like every word is kind of like that, where it's just very jargon, and you want to make it engaging also. So it's like, you don't want to go too far in either direction. You don't want it to be like too using just kind of all basic words, but you don't want to make it, you know, all long, cumbersome words either. I think it's just about having the right balance and trying to have the most clear, vivid word is important. Mm-hmm. So definitely source can be a help.
A big help. Janice just kind of commenting on something we talked about before, you talked about before, but yeah, the importance of showing, not telling, something that we beginners struggle with a lot, I think.
I think everybody's heard of it, you know, everybody's heard of show, don't tell, but actually finding it in your manuscript is hard.
Yeah, very hard. Now, I'm conscious of time, so I wanted to take us on a little bit, and because I know you're putting together a new resource for writers, the Energize Your Writing Toolkits. Have I got the name right?
Yep. Yeah, I'm working on that. I'm hoping to release that this fall. It'll be something I sell on my website. Just another problem I see a lot is just writers like having trouble. You know, this is a system that I actually used for myself, and then I decided to kind of try to adapt it so that other writers could use it also. But I think it's sometimes hard to find a fresh way to like show a character's emotions, like to show that they're sad or that they're angry. You know, it's easy to revert to the easy, like glare. She glared at him, or, you know, tears welled in her eyes. It's just sort of cliches that a lot of writers tend to use, because it's hard to describe emotions in a unique way, or to describe a smile. You know, I see that a lot. Like, she smiled, she grinned. You know, smile is like another word that you see sometimes, like hundreds of times in a manuscript. Mm-hmm. So I when I write, I kind of gave myself, like I created this binder with just lists of, for different categories, different ways to say smile, different ways to describe a look or a gaze, or different ways to describe, you know, when a character is surprised or sad or happy. And then I wound up, that was so helpful to me. I decided to kind of expand on that and create something like that for writers. So I did a lot of nonverbal communication research. I kind of combed through tons of nonverbal communication books and just kind of collected all these different phrases and kind of to put it into different categories so that you can go through if you're like editing your book and you're like, okay, I need a way to how can I, what can I have this character do? You know, so she's mad and I can't think of anything other than she glared at him. You can kind of go through this list and pick something off it. And then there's also blank lines so that you can write your own. Like, I recommend printing it out and then putting it in a binder and then just adding to it. You know, go through some of your past manuscripts and find some of your kind of phrases that you've used before, and just kind of, so it's just kind of, it's not necessarily to copy what's in there, but you can if you want to, but it's more to just kind of get your mind sparking, like, oh, I can, these are a bunch of things I can use. Let me see if I can work something like that into the scene. So I'm hoping to release that in the fall, and then they'll be able to purchase it, you know, on my website.
Okay, cool. That sounds like a really useful tool to have in your toolkit for as a writer. Sajid has a follow-up question. Do you even change the plot sometimes, or just restrain yourself by corrective measures according to the given plot?
So when I'm like editing a book, like there's like a line editors shouldn't cross between like editing and ghostwriting. So I would never like change a plot, but I would tell them where I think that they might want to change the plot, and I'll brainstorm some ideas. Like, you know, here's some things, you know, there's not enough going on, you know, or here's some things, some ideas I have that, you know, might, you can use them, or maybe it'll help spark something, you know, but something along those lines of, here are some ideas of how you can kind of expand that plot or make it work better. So it's more about brainstorming and giving the author some ideas and working with them to find ways to make their plot work better. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a lot of, because I write myself, I think I, like, you know, that kind of comes easily to me, where I can say, you know, I don't think this plot is working here, but, you know, maybe here were some ideas. And then sometimes they'll write back to me like later, like, you know, a couple of weeks later, oh, you know, I thought of something, what do you think about this? I'll be like, yeah, I think that would work better. So.
Say, that's great. Okay. If anybody has any last minute questions, do get them in. And if you do, while you are typing, I just want to share with you Stacey's Facebook group. which is Shortcut for Writers. It's a really great group, and you'll find lots of, Stacey, you're always posting really useful blog posts or tips or tricks, for a better word, but lots of useful stuff in there. I wonder if you could also just tell us a little bit more about where we can find out about you and particularly about your program.
Yep. So if for my books, I have a website, StaceyJuba.com. And then for writers, I have a separate website, ShortcutsForWriters.com. And if you go there, you can sign up for my free 5-day line editing course, which it goes into some of the things we talked about, like the looks and the words to look for in your writing. So, look, I can't get away from that. but then you'll get some lessons emailed to you. And then you can also join my Facebook group. And then I have, if you join the Facebook group, you want to make sure you go to the unit section, because I have, it's pretty extensive. You can get the blurb toolkit to help you write your book blurb. And then I have some different like blog posts and videos I've done. I have a lot of guest bloggers who talk, it's a feature on my blog called Behind the Rewrite. And they'll actually take us through like the rewrite process for their book, like what they maybe share, like the five things, big things they wound up changing and why, you know, or they'll actually show a before and after scene that's line edited. So I try to link those up in the unit section so that you can just kind of go through and, you know, catch up on them if you missed any. So
I just want to show this one as well. This one is for the free class. Yeah.
I don't know why it says billing. I use ConvertKit. You can sign up through there, and they gave me some weird thing.
I think it's a template name. That's what I think they do. Yeah. But take a screenshot of this. But I'm also going to put the links into the comments here as well, so you'll be able to come and click straight through later. But
it's on the navigation bar of the Shortcuts for Writers site. It says like free editing class, so you can.
Sajid says, thank you so much, Stacey, for your enriching explanation. God bless you and your family.
Thank you.
What a lovely thing to say. And Janet, you are a wonderful resource, Stacey. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for hanging out with us.
Well, that was lovely. Yes, indeed. Thank you so much for being with us, Stacey, for sharing your wisdom. And someone who is going through the program, I really, really do recommend. I think it's well worthwhile. And so I encourage everybody to go and check it out. Mm-hmm. So, Stacey, thank you.
Yep, thank you.
And to everybody, have a good rest of the day, wherever you are in the world. And I shall see you all again tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you found that helpful and inspirational. Now, don't forget to come on over to Facebook and join my group, Turning Readers into Writers. It is especially for you if you are a beginner writer who is looking to write their first novel. If you join the group, you will also find a free cheat sheet there called 3 Secret Hacks to Write with Consistency. So go to emmadesi.com/turningreadersintowriters, hit join. Can't wait to see you in there. All right. Thank you. Bye bye.